Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, to kick off today's show, I wanted to go back to something you brought up in yesterday's show, that in the same game, the Packers' victory over the Texans, we saw Julius Peppers get a sack to move into fifth on the all-time sacks list in NFL history. At the same time, we saw a rookie, Dean Lowry, get his first career sack in that same game. Let's start with Peppers, and we talked about him a lot in the offseason. 15 years in the league, he's now got a sack in three consecutive games to put him at 6.5 on the season here. Just a guy who seems to keep going and has stayed awfully productive here late in his career.
Yeah, he has, and he's stepped up at a big time for the Packers. With Nick Perry dealing with now that hand injury, Clay Matthews, the hamstring and the shoulder, Kyler Fackrell's missed the last two games with a hamstring injury as well. So
that's right.
It's been really critical for Peppers to really have the production that he's had in recent weeks. Packers have talked about this plan they had from beginning really in the summer in terms of how they sort of worked off his reps a little bit. Now you're starting to see that amp up. I think he played, I want to say it was 88% of the defensive snaps in that win this past weekend. So where they're at right now, this is a good position. And at 6.5 sacks, I think Peppers thinks he has some more in him here with four more guaranteed games this season.
Yeah, for sure. And I took a quick look at his stats, too. I realized yesterday that one more sack for Peppers, and he will have seven or more sacks in a season for all but 1 year in his career. It'd be 14 out of 15 years with seven or more sacks if he gets one more. And you look at the guys that he's passed on that all-time sacks list this year to climb up to fifth. He's passed John Randall, Richard Dent, Jason Taylor. This latest sack moved him ahead of Michael Strahan. So now at 142.5, he's eight sacks out of fourth place, which is held by Chris Dolman. So a couple of former Minnesota Vikings there in that list. But all of those guys mentioned there, with the exception of Jason Taylor, are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Taylor is eligible for the first time this year, and he's a semifinalist at this stage of the election process. I have to believe Julius Peppers is going into the Pro Football Hall of Fame someday. He doesn't really want to talk about it right now. He mentioned, hey, you know, I'll worry about that later. That's kind of been his right. Line all season long. But I would have to believe that his is a Hall of Fame career.
You can tell that it means something to him, though, that is, as much as I know he wants to win a Super Bowl yet as well, that would be the ultimate sort of justification for his career and really being able to show what he did and how it, you know, transcended generations. Second overall pick in 2002. We've talked to Dom Capers a number of times about that decision. And the Texans obviously going with David Carr and Peppers' career working out the way it did once he got to Carolina. I think it says a lot about him, too, the way he's sort of ingrained himself in Green Bay. This is a guy who's incredibly popular in the locker room.
Yep.
You can tell his teammates really rally around him. I'm working on a story for our game program this upcoming week, and the amount of guys talking about not only just him as a person, but just having him in the room with his presence. People realize there's a lot of built-up respect over the years with Julius Peppers, and he did joke, too, that he is friends with Michael Strahan, didn't get a text message from him, isn't expecting one either, but to have 142.5 sacks, he wasn't thinking about it during the game, but afterwards, I think it did kind of hit him a little bit about what that means in league history.
Yeah, and it was actually an important sack in the game. It got lost in the shuffle a little
right.
bit because it came in the first half, but it came towards the end of the first half, and it helped the Packers stop the Texans there on that late drive in the second quarter, and actually became the first time all season the Packers defense has not allowed points in the final 2 minutes of a first half. So that was a good step for the defense. But then also hearing from Dom Capers yesterday, he talked about how towards the end of these, you know, Hall of Fame type players, he's coached Kevin Green.
Yeah.
He's coached Jason Taylor in Miami. Now he's got Julius Peppers. And I think maybe if you were to say, what is the common thread of these guys staying so productive late in their careers? Health would have to be the number one thing, don't you think?
I mentioned this to Jayron Elliott, the Packers' third year, linebacker, who shared that outside linebacker room with Peppers the last 2.5 years, and I mentioned to him that he's missed four games in his NFL career due to injury.
Four games. 15 years.
Fifteen years.
Yeah.
I think I haven't even gotten to 15 years of actually working yet. I don't know if I've ever not missed, you know, 4 days of work. I mean, it's incredible. Just his durability and his production in those years. To be able, as you said, Mike, he didn't have a 22-sack season interspliced with that whole career. It was a lot of consistency. It was between 7 and 15, anywhere in between there, and he did it on a year-in and year-out basis. And look at what he gave the Green Bay Packers. When he came here, there was questions about if it'd be a one-year deal, if what the future would be. 2 years later, in his third season now, still making some impact for this defense.
Yeah, for sure. And as we've talked about, the fact that maybe his snaps were limited a little bit early in the season, starting to pay some dividends here late in the year. But after the break, I want to flip the page to the rookie and talk a little bit about Dean Lowry. We'll do that after this, back with more on Packers Unscripted. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkiewicz there, and Wes, Dean Lowry, the rookie fourth-round draft pick out of Northwestern. Always fun to see a guy get his first NFL sack. There was a little bit of extra celebration, you might say, when it happened. Dayton Jones, I think, was the first guy right next to him out there on the field. But maybe a moment that was coming for Lowry from what we've heard from the coaching staff. He's been earning more snaps. His snap total had been, you know, more in the single digits most games, but it hopped up on Sunday against the Texans into the teens in terms of the number of snaps, and he really made the most of them.
He did. First off, with that sack, it was funny because he comes through, as he said. I mean, he did a lot of research on this, and they kind of thought they had a little bit of a tell on Dwayne Brown. And when he really gets back in his set, that usually tips him off that it's going to be a pass. As it turns out, they're running a pass rush game with Dayton Jones. Brown kind of hesitates, then he takes Jones, but the left guard doesn't pick up Lowry. So Lowry has a straight shot to the quarterback after the running back blows the personal protection there. And sometimes when it happens that fast, you could miss him.
Yeah.
But, 6'8" quarterback, Osweiler's a big guy, but Lowry used every inch of his body there to take him down. Afterwards, didn't really seem like he knew what he wanted to do for a celebration. He just kind of bounced around a little bit, just like was kind of, you know, jacked up. Obviously didn't have anything planned, but Dayton Jones, Latroy Guyon, a lot of guys sort of, you know, rallied to him in that moment. And the one thing that he said was kind of the common theme among all of them was just saying, that's your first one, a lot more to go.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll definitely hope to see a lot more from number 94. But that wasn't the only play he made in the game. Right. He also had a batted pass at the line of scrimmage when he got a really nice bull rush on the guard there. And then also on an incomplete pass in the red zone when Osweiler took a shot at the tight end, Lowry was coming around the edge and was really right there to potentially lay a hit on Osweiler if he hadn't gotten rid of the ball at that moment. So some big moments there for Lowry. We saw the Packers play a little bit more base defense as opposed to the de facto base, which has been the nickel for the bulk of the season because of the Texans and their ground oriented offense. But good to see a young player like that make the most of his opportunities and a sign that those snaps that those young players can get early in the season, that's what they get them for, so that when they are forced into action, when they're asked to play late in the season, when there's a lot more at stake, they have a chance to make an impact.
It kind of reminds me of our producer, Marvin. Marvin came in here, intern. There's going to be some rookie moments right off the bat. As the course of the season goes on, when you really need to count on him, he steps up. Lowry had 18 snaps in that game. That was a career high. I think it only hovered outside of 10 once this season. I think it was in like week 3.
Yeah, that sounds
so
right.
So for him to get the amount of reps that he did, obviously the base defense helped, but that pass deflection was actually as a 3-tech.
Yeah.
He was working inside against the guard, and as he said, when he gets his hands on guys, the guards typically, unless you're Jason Spriggs right now, aren't 6'6". They're usually right in that 6'3 range, so it actually gives Lowry an inch or two, a little bit of an advantage to peek up. They were playing mostly a max protect in that offense, so if you know that they're going to sell out doing that, you try to get your hands up, get the pass deflection. He was really prolific at that during his time at Northwestern, and I think we've seen it in spurts too, particularly during the preseason, that that could be something that he could do as well. So Packers are excited about him. Mike McCarthy, as you said, mentioned that this is a young man that's earned these opportunities. Now, with the defensive line working as much sub-package as they do with only one or two of those guys, not as many to go around, but
yeah.
He's certainly been making the most of those chances.
Yeah, but and it never hurts to have another guy that you can call on in the trenches as far as rotating those guys in the defensive front, keeping guys fresh, especially late in the year. You get into these cold weather games when you know you might have some traction issues and whatnot. You can send somebody in with a clean pair of cleats and get a guy out of there who maybe needs to clean off his cleats to avoid slipping and sliding around in the field, which we saw a lot of on Sunday.
Yeah, and to one more point too, Mike McCarthy mentioned he liked what he saw from the base, but there were too many mental errors there for his absolute approval of it, just because it had been so long since they used it. They're going to need that base defense here coming up. When you look at Seattle, another possible snow game, and with how much they like to run the ball if Thomas Rawls is healthy. Chicago, you know, Jordan Howard burst back on the scene. Is Adrian Peterson, could he potentially be back?
We'll have to wait and see. Christmas Eve, yeah, and Peterson might be back.
These last three upcoming games especially, running backs could definitely factor into that. And as you mentioned as well, the snow could potentially factor into that. We might see more of that stuff at Lambeau Field on Sunday. All those experiences for Dean Lowry and the rest of those rookies, really invaluable this time of the year.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll be keeping an eye on the weather forecast as the week goes along. But for now, we'll throw it to a break, and we'll be back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, another positive development we saw in the Packers' victory over the Texans was the return game on special teams coming to life a little bit, you might say. Recent games here, the Packers have turned punt returns over to the veteran Randall Cobb, and he broke two punt returns of 20-plus yards in the game against Houston, and then a kickoff return on a squib kick. Ty Montgomery scooped it up and went, I believe it was 39 yards, to get the Packers out to the 40-yard line
right,
and beyond. So seeing that kind of development from the return game, you hope there's more to come.
Absolutely. And I really like this idea that the Packers had with using Randall Cobb in this way. Cobb seems completely on board with it. He's also the most natural guy I think they have. I mean, Micah Hyde is a really good, you know, he does a really good job on the returns too in terms of his catching and his mentality. But he's been dealing with that shoulder injury.
Yeah.
And as Cobb said, you know, this is something they actually thought about doing earlier in the season, but because of his hamstring issue, it just really didn't work out because they were limiting his snaps on his actual, you know, in his actual duties on offense. How important, though, were those returns? The Packers' longest return last season was 16 yards.
On a punt.
Cobb surpassed that twice in that game. He's a game changer. He's a playmaker. And he can really switch the field position in a lot of different ways. To him, it's another opportunity to touch the football, which means another opportunity to help the offense and the Packers in general. So I think he sees the benefit in it. And if this is the way they have to go, they've done it before. I think the one exciting thing about this current situation they find themselves in is this is a really good opportunity to get him in a groove with that, because he was sort of dabbling in it here and there.
Yeah.
He'd come in and take a fair catch inside the red zone. When he's at his best, his first two seasons in the NFL, when he got multiple reps at it, I think he's smart enough to also make sure that he stays out of harm's way in most cases.
Yeah, and we saw on actually both of those punt returns for Cobb, his ability to make tacklers miss, especially the guys that initially get down there.
Right.
You know, that's the whole key on a punt return, is making that first guy miss, because a lot of times, you know, there's going to be the one or two sort of unblocked guys or the guys who are going to beat their man. But the other guys are getting blocked a lot of times. So if you can make that first guy miss, all of a sudden, you know, a 3 or 4 yard punt return can become a 20 or even 30 or possibly bust one. You look at the kickoff return by Ty Montgomery on the film, which I have a snippet of that in my What You Might Have Missed feature on the website this week. That was the one, I think, that where Mike McCarthy really thought had a shot to go the distance.
Yeah.
with just a little bit more sustainability on those blocks downfield, and Montgomery might have gone to the house.
Yeah, and Montgomery talked about this too. He also said he really had some ice and you know, kind of sleet build up underneath his cleat, which didn't allow him to really get the traction he wanted to push up field near the end. He obviously, if you watch the play, he kind of has to sort of simmer out of bounds. Just based on, you know, really just wanting to make sure he keeps the ball and keeps his footing. Still a really explosive return. Jeff Janis had a nice, I think it was 28-yard return as well.
Yeah, he got the ball out to the 30-yard line.
Yeah, taking it from the 2-yard line. So that's a small change in field position that you want to get out of those special teams units, those kick return units, particularly when we get to this time of the year, because it's going to become progressively more difficult for the kickoff specialist to be able to knock this thing in the end zone consistently and make teams start at the 25. You need to be mentally prepared to take those back. And I think even for the Packers blockers too, getting back into a rhythm now and understanding what their job duty is and assignments when it's real time, when it's not just practice. Because I think that's one of the things that McCarthy was sort of addressing a little bit, is that the blockers, it's probably not as natural to do what they need to do on those things because you're not getting as many reps on it as they have in the past. So,
yeah.
But either whatever way you slice it, field position, I think average field starting field position that game was the 38-yard line. That's as good as it gets for an offense.
Yeah, for sure. And this is one of those instances with putting Cobb back there on punt returns, as you said. We saw earlier in the season an explosive return by Trevor Davis, the rookie, had the big punt return against Atlanta. But then shortly after that, he had the muff in Tennessee. Those are the kinds of things that that the Packers aren't at the stage where they can necessarily take chances with young guys. If you have a veteran guy who's on board, ready to do it, and you feel he's your best option, then that's the guy to go with, and Cobb is certainly rewarding that right now.
Right, Mike. And the other thing to consider, too, you've talked about it at points in this season, is the margin for error. The margin for error is thin right now. It's still very small for the Packers. Not saying that they can't overcome that, but just that they can't give up the loss anymore. They need to keep the wins coming. They need to be able to keep the positive drives coming and being able to maximize their opportunities. Maybe earlier in the season, you have some wiggle room there and be able to learn from certain things. But right now, you need to have your consistent core. That's going to lead you to where you need to get to. That's nothing against Trevor Davis. He's a young man coming in, a lot of potential. But Randall Cobb is about as good as it gets on punt returns. And if he's good with it, I think it is obviously the right path forward for the Packers trying to make this playoff run.
Yeah, for sure. And with that, before we go to a break, Wes, we'll take care of some sponsor business. Picture this. You and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliners watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it? Well, if you enter Cousin Sub's Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. Two pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. Enter daily now through December 12, which is right around the corner, by completing the entry form and submitting. For complete rules and eligibility, go to packers.com/best seats. Cousin Subs, we believe in better. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, not to end the show on a downer of a note, but we do have a little bit of sad news to talk about, and that's former Packers tight end Mitchell Henry, young player, been in training camp with the Packers the past couple of summers and spent some time on the practice squad, suddenly diagnosed with a very rare form of cancer. Just an incredibly sad story and something that has hit the locker room and hit the coaching staff and everybody that got to know Mitchell during his time here in Green Bay, and certainly thoughts and prayers go out to him as he tries to fight this.
Yeah, Mitchell Henry is gonna. I could probably cover the Packers for about 35 or 40 years. Mitchell Henry is gonna be one of my favorite guys that I've ever covered. Just a really nice, humble, soft-spoken Kentucky kid, avid outdoorsman. And, recently was this past week, I believe, it was diagnosed with a rare form of leukemia, the same type that Craig Sager has, AML, which is a pretty severe version of it. So, but he's in good spirits. I was talking with Jeff Janis about this a little bit on Monday. He's a good friend with Mitchell Henry. Both of them, their friendship kind of forged over the love for the outdoors, which you know a lot about with Janice.
Right.
And he said, you know, he's still been texting with them. They're still texting photos of the deer that they've seen on their trail cameras and that. It's tough, and it's going to be a battle for him. But the nice thing was Mike McCarthy saying that he'll get the full support of the Green Bay Packers, you know, during this battle. And as it turned out, you know, his brother created a page for him and actually said on there that it was because of his hand injury at the end of camp that he actually really even has insurance right now.
Yeah.
That he suffered. But Mike McCarthy, when he talked, said he, you know, knocked everybody over. And it also made some things make sense in terms of training camp and how Mitchell performed at times.
Yeah, I think he was a guy that really a lot of coaches and players were rooting for because you saw so much potential in him. They wanted to see him make the team and really make a run at this with an NFL career. But as McCarthy said, now that you get the diagnosis, it explains some things because they just never felt that he was really quite himself this past summer in training camp. And you know, as I said, a guy that a lot of players in the locker room took a liking to. Aaron Rodgers used to tease him about you know, his catfish hunting. You know,
the noodler.
And, yeah, called him a noodler, which I guess is some sort of a method for catching catfish. But a lot of thoughts and prayers coming from that Packers locker room.
Yeah, right, and they are still, for everybody out there, they're still looking for a bone marrow donor. They're going to be holding a drive for that in January. Also, if you want any more information on how you can donate, you can find that on our website, on the Packers.com website, on the story that we have on Mitchell.
Yeah, and nice job on that story on Mitchell, and a good conversation with Jeff Janis there as well. So with that, we'll call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the Team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.